First of all, I wanted to thank you for the lunch. I enjoyed everybody's contribution. That was a really nice selection of good foods. Appreciate that. It's a nice way to offer to each other. So I'm going to make a few comments about emotions and working with emotions, and then we'll be sitting and walking and sitting and ending. I'm going to begin with a poem by Donna Fowles, or however it's pronounced, called Allow. There is no controlling life. Try corralling a lightning bolt, containing a tornado. Dam a stream and it will create a new channel. Resist and the tide will sweep you off your feet. Allow and grace will carry you to higher ground. The only safety lies in letting it all in. The wild and the weak. Fear, fantasies, failures, and success. When loss rips off the door of the heart, or sadness veils your vision with despair, practice becomes simply bearing the truth. In the choice to let go of your known way of being, the whole world is revealed to your new eyes. So, of course, all the basic principles of mindfulness and presence apply to our emotional life, both the emotions that we enjoy and feel good about, and the emotions that feel more difficult or unpleasant. And it's important to remember, again, that emotions are themselves never a problem. It's our reactivity to them. It's our ability to relate to them or be with them or not. If you look at what you're afraid of, and often our fears is what is underneath a lot of our places we struggle or the places we have difficulty with. If you look at what we're afraid of, there's really the only thing we're ever afraid of is some kind of emotion or experience. We're only ever afraid of some experience that we might experience, that we don't want to, that we fear we'll be overwhelmed by. And emotions are often one of these experiences that we fear. You know, we think we're afraid of a lot of things happening, or we think we're afraid of, you know, something outside of ourselves. But there actually is nothing outside of yourself in a certain way. The only thing we know, the only thing we experience moment to moment is experience. And so when we say we're afraid of something, if we can be conscious of it, it's some kind of, some kind of physical or emotional feeling that we think again that we can't handle or will be too horrible or too overwhelming. For example, I used to have a fear of flying. And I like to say it wasn't really a fear of flying, it was a fear of crashing. But it wasn't even really a fear of crashing, as much as it was a fear of the idea of what I might experience in that situation. And that I would have physical or emotional, going down, death, everything that one can make up about that kind of, in one's mind, about that kind of situation. So it was useful to me to become more clear that what if I wasn't afraid of my own experience? What if I wasn't afraid of my own feelings, both physical and emotional? In a big way, our practice is teaching us, again, how to be open enough to hold anything. Of course, right now we're probably not in a place where we can hold anything, but we can hold something. And as we practice more and more, we become more and more fearless and more able to be present, be here, be with ourselves, with whatever it is that comes up. So that's part of the inspiration around emotions and emotional pain. So one of the beginning places is being able to be open to and willing to experience fear. Now I say that from being what I sort of think of as a bit of a scaredy cat, historical scaredy cat. I mean, I've had fears and anxieties and phobias and stuff, so I'm not speaking abstractly. And with this fear of flying, I finally took it on as a spiritual practice. Okay, I'm going to fly, and I'm going to be with the feelings, and I'm going to face that. You know, often if you read fear of flying literature, what you should do, one of the things they say is, the statistics are that it's safer to fly than, drive on the freeways in California, which never was that, reassuring to me. It was always like, yeah, well, maybe, but I still might be on that plane, And I actually had a little fear of freeways anyway. But what I finally, it took a lot of work, came to was, okay, I'm going to get on this plane and I might die. I'm going to get on this plane and it's true, I might die. And what if that's okay? And so that became my practice, and it was a very powerful practice. And it both, I think, has, now I fly without much fear, except when the plane does weird things. and also, I think over time, I wouldn't say my fear of death is gone, but it really has softened a lot. So I'm going to share this poem. This is by Wendell Berry, and I think of it as instructions for meditation. And because I do a lot of nature-based or outdoor practice, retreats with people and stuff, I like this particularly. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirrings become quiet. Around me like circles in water. My calf lie in their places, where I left them, asleep like cattle. There's a second part which I'll read, but that first part, you might think of us all here as trees sitting still. So we come together and we sit still. And we let all our stirrings settle down. And we let our tasks, normal responsibilities and worries and concerns of life, we leave them at home, on our computers and iPhones. Let them sleep like cattle. So, if we do that, the second part is, then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song.
The name of that is?
Wendell Berry?
The name of the poem is?
The name of the poem is I Go Among Trees. So this is our practice. And it's important to know that, again, we open up. We let the fear and the grief, the anger, or whatever it is, we let ourselves be in its sight. And we let ourselves open to it. And you know, emotions sometimes hurt. And it's kind of like that story of I call it the mangy dog of pain, the one I read this morning. Sometimes emotions hurt, but it doesn't mean that's a problem. And we can learn to actually experience them purely and freely and simply. And that's all our emotions want to do, is to be felt. But we add these layers and these stories and these complications and these misunderstandings. And I have to say, in this culture, just being me and growing up in a dysfunctional family and then being a psychotherapist and a teacher, we, as a culture, are not very skilled at just feeling our feelings. Something so natural and simple, it seems like. Years ago, I was at a Zen retreat in upstate New York, and one of the teachers was giving instructions to the group, sort of mindfulness instructions. And I remember a young man raised his hand and he said, yes, but he said something like, but what about feelings? What about emotions? What about feelings? And the way he said it, you could see it was kind of like, what do I do with the problem of feelings? You know? And you know, sort of the mistake of feelings or the interruption of feelings in some way. So he said, what do I do about feelings? And the Zen teacher, in a very Zen-like way, said, well, you feel them. And that was his instruction. And that's our instruction. And can we do that? You know, we often reject our experience, our inner experience of all kinds, whether it's physical pain or emotions or different variations on those. If we look at what are we actually rejecting, we're actually rejecting and pushing away part of ourselves. We're actually dividing ourselves. We're actually disconnecting from our own hearts. And in doing that, we're disconnecting from the source of wisdom and compassion that's possible. We're really disconnecting from our own life. And I think many of us feel the pain and the grief of being disconnected somewhere. We don't even know what to call it. I actually think that's the malaise of our culture in general. And we look to all different kind of things when it's actually ourselves and our own experience and our own willingness to be that intimate companion to ourselves, that intimate loving companion to ourselves that we're grieving. Robert Bly says that every part of us that we do not learn to love will become hostile towards us. Every part of us that we do not learn to love will become hostile towards us. And a lot of our suffering and our difficulty and the ways we don't, our dis-ease and the ways we don't feel well, I think is some of that, you might say, inner hostility or the inner atrophying almost of our wholeness. So many people, they want to feel joy. Do you want to feel joy? Do you like to feel bliss? Or do you like to feel love? Would you like to feel happiness? Contentment. Of course, I hope you do. Paradox. It's not really a paradox, but the irony. I don't know if it's that either. But the reality is that place in us, that tenderness of heart, that place that is sentient and can feel, that can feel joy and bliss and love, compassion and goodwill and all of that, is the same place that feels grief and feels anger, that feels that sadness and sorrow. It's all the place of tenderness and sensitivity. So what we do is we try to cut off one and hope to get the other. If you shut down that organ, you shut it all down. You mute it all. And you actually don't have the opportunity to learn the profound teachings of grief and even anger. And you shut down to the transformative possibilities within that.
Question. Could you say something about transformative possibilities in it? Maybe not now, but at some point.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it is woven in and becomes clear. The transformative possibilities are really in the willingness to not resist and the understanding, how can I say this? It sounds a little too abstract. What I was going to say is understanding the way you begin to understand the way reality is actually unfolding or happening, or you begin to actually connect with the depth of what is beyond all the forms. Again, that sounds a little abstract, but maybe I'll be able to pull that in, make it more, I was going to say substantial, but that's not the right word. More palpable? I don't know. So, there's a lot I could say, I don't think I'm going to, about the naturalness of emotions and the humanness of emotions. They're not just human, they're mammalian. And because there can be a lot of attitudes that there's something wrong about them, they shouldn't be there, but they all serve a wonderful and important purpose. They're a kind of language that's telling us a lot about how we're interacting with the world and our connections or lack of connections. And there's an intelligence in them. And if you haven't read, it's an old book now, but if you've never read Emotional Intelligence by Dan Goleman, I recommend it. So there's really two major places we get caught with emotions, similar to physical pain, is we try to control or repress it. We repress it. Most of us are really good at repressing. We have a favored emotion, at least one we like to repress. Usually either it's grief or anger or both. Or the other side of it is we get identified. We get identified with the emotion, and which means we kind of feed it as a way of adding to it or feeding it or thinking we're it and kind of being lost in the energy of it without any sort of presence or clarity. So our job is to, this is the razor's edge of mindfulness, our job is to neither repress nor feed or add on to. Neither repress nor feed or add on to. Well, what is that? Again, that's the ability to more and more be comfortable with just opening up and experiencing it. That allowing that I read in the first poem. I'm going to read this. This is by Gibran, and it really relates again to both physical and emotional pain. Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding. Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding. Even as the stone of the fruit must break, that its heart may stand in the sun, so you must know pain. And could you keep your heart in wonder at the daily miracles of your life, your pain would not seem less wondrous than your joy. And you would accept the seasons of your heart, even as if you have always accepted the seasons that pass over the fields. And you would watch with serenity through the winters of your grief. So one of the results, transformative results, transformation is really what I'm saying is it becomes its true nature, or it becomes its awakened form, its equanimity. It's a kind of profound equanimity we learn. And that's what all of this is leading towards, where we can actually be open with the ups and downs, the seasons of our grief and the seasons of our joy, with the kind of flow and fluidity and ease that is actually possible. And also one of the gifts of all of this is we begin to... Well, I'll read this. This is from Pema Chodron. If your everyday practice is to open to all your emotions, to all the people you meet, to all the situations you encounter, without closing down, trusting that you can do that, then that will take you as far as you can go. And then you'll understand all the teachings that anyone has ever taught. And in that kind of open letting go and presence, this is me now. there is that equanimity, and there is a kind of freedom and peace that is available no matter what is happening. So, I want to say a little bit more about some of the specific suggestions about working with emotions, but if you have more questions or comments at this point.
Excuse me. Did you just invite questions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, when we shut down those places that we see as shadow, whether it's anger or grief, then we shut down that organ completely, is what this teaching suggests.
Or at least partially.
Partially.
We're numbing it, we're limiting it. It's, yeah.
So our job, again, is to neither repress, to feed.
Well, I said feed or add on to. And again, the adding is that all the layers and layers of stuff that we add on to it. Is that what I might add to this is, and this is a classic Buddhist teaching which you've probably heard too, is the teaching of the two arrows. The Buddha taught in a sutta was that discomfort arises, first noble truth again, because we're sentient, we're feeling, living creatures. Whether it's physical or emotional, and again, emotional discomfort to some degree, I don't know if you call it, it's not always discomfort, but is natural to, for example, grief is natural response to loss. Nothing. The Buddha talked about his sadness when his best buddy, monk friend died. so that's what's called the first arrow. And then, we have this arrow, ouch! And then we go, oh, I've been hit by an arrow, and we're mindful of it, and we take care of it, and we ideally respond to it, we're loving, we feel a little, whatever it needs. But that's the ideal. What happens instead is what he said, is what we do is we get one arrow and in an attempt to fix the first arrow, we start sticking ourselves with other arrows. Not just the second, but the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, mm-hmm. and seventh, and eighth, and ninth. Meaning we have an experience perhaps of sadness because we've lost somebody. But the sadness, then it turns into guilt because we think we haven't been good enough or did the right thing. Then that turns into anger because we're resentful for how we learn to feel guilty. And then we feel guilty again because we're angry and we're not good enough. And then we begin to judge ourselves for being really spiritually pathetic. And then we get depressed. And then, you see what I'm saying. This is called the pancha. This is how we spin out. Okay. So the whole point of this is, much of practice is just getting to, this is what's happening. Breath is happening. Tingling is happening. Sensation in my ankles happening. A little sadness might be happening. A little contentment might be happening. And we're there for it and we see it and we aren't moving away from it and creating whole other realities that take us into our old stuff instead of the freshness and immediacy and the actual profoundness that is there, that we can be understand the mysterious, impermanent, spacious, empty, nature of what's going on. So that was an initial thing I added on to that. Yes?
One of the things that I do in my practice, and I always feel like I'm kind of cheating when I do this, but it's so helpful. Like, for example, if I notice that I'm being, I have a particularly obsessive thought, or, you know, I find that, or if I'm very angry about some reason, I feel like a negative thing that I'm ruminating on. And when I meditate and I'm with that emotion, I kind of try, it's sort of like a, I guess like a letting it just go to its, you know, just trying to let it get to its source, the deeper source, the deeper source. And somehow for me, trying to be open to, you know, sort of what's underneath that and there, for me, the discovery of maybe what that's about sort of helps me let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of always feel like I'm cheating because it's very focused. I mean, it's deliberate. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? It's but it seems like when in meditation, when you have quieted down enough that you can really allow that to mm-hmm. happen, mm-hmm. it's helpful.
Yes. And what about that seems like cheating?
Well, because it's sort of like it feels well, I'll do it anyway. Stop it.
I know.
It feels like, you know, I'm doing something that's very, very a deliberate effort, you know, mm-hmm. not really, you know, kind of just trying to sort of
allow.
Well, I mean, it's purposeful. It's very purposeful, mm-hmm. I guess. So why it feels a little
funny. Okay. Yeah, so I'm wondering, because what you're describing sounds to me like something that naturally begins to happen in meditation. That you contact something on its most obvious level, and then as you actually do this process of opening, and you could also describe what you're doing as what real inquiry or investigation is. We think of inquiry investigation, again, in our culture as thinking about something, but in this meditative sense, it means we look at it very clearly and deeply, and we may choose to do that. There's choice you can use a lot in meditation, wise choice. And when you do that, then it's like that thing unfolds and reveals more and more and more and more about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds right on track to me.
It seems like something I read, addressed it as sort of like just allowing yourself to sort of, you know, deepen that mm-hmm. thought. I don't see it described a lot, but yeah, it's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It's very. I think that a lot of things that are the benefit. You talked about equanimity, and I hear that. See that word? And I'm going to go home and I'm going to look it up in the dictionary. And get
that
it.
What?
I said I'm going to go home and I'm going to look it up in the dictionary because. I always read it and I look at it and I want to really understand it because I think that some of the things that we experience sort of you know, the benefits of our practice are so subtle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you said be open to the people you're with, that you can just be open to, you know. And but I think like the kind of people that I'm open and the kind of people I'm with every day can be, you know, pretty intense.
Yeah.
So when I at the end of every day, that practice is a very necessary part of me getting back to my baseline, really. And I think, and I've never heard transformation described as leading to an, I never heard that equals, you know, transformation awakened is equanimity, and I think that's really a significant thought, and a good significant thing to say. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that description and that sharing that, because you know, there's a number of things that you said, but I do want to highlight, you know, the specific, particularly again, the specific thing you said, because we do contact things mostly at what I would call the most obvious or superficial level, the most conditioned level that we're used to. And when we can, in this process, there is where it sort of, it can have different descriptions, but I often have it like what you say, there's a, like, you sink down, and it's, it just sort of opens up. I don't even know how to describe it in the end, but it just opens up, mm-hmm. and is what it is. And it's okay. And also a lot of insight can happen along the way. And insight, again, isn't thinking about things. It's suddenly seeing with clarity what actually is. And you can make inner connections and all kinds of things can happen. So, yeah.
I think one of the dangers that sometimes we don't realize is that to be with a particular emotion or pain doesn't mean, I like this word that Steve Armstrong used, was indulging. Mm-hmm. That is, often we think that to be with it, you know, we need to really feel it. And what happens is we indulge in that, or we wallow in that, mm-hmm. as opposed to staying present with it.
Yeah.
So there's a different quality, and maybe that is a little bit of maybe Jeannie saying, well, you know, I'm cheating, right? Is feeling like you're not, like, being in the emotion. But actually the practice is not to be lost in it.
Right.
And I think that that's really important to know, that there's a difference between being caught in it and actually being with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, thanks. I think that's been emphasized because it's true that a lot of people I talk to and I meet with individually or whatever says, oh yeah, I'm really with that emotion, or I'm real, and it's pretty clear they're lost and identified or feeding or adding or whatever it is, and there isn't that larger perspective, or however you might say it. It's and people very readily, we identify with their emotions and get all caught up in them. And it goes back to what you said earlier, too, about that the right
distance.
Mm-hmm. And we need that with emotions as well, to sort of play with that. Yeah, yeah.
To me, I don't know if other people might be seeing it like this, but the way everyone, you know, here is kind of adding to describe it, it almost seems to me like this kind of organic, you know, how we try to grow vegetables and mm-hmm. fruits stuff, without a lot of additives, you know, how you're talking about adding things in. Mm-hmm. To me, it's almost starting to seem like this kind of organic living in your body and in your emotions, mm-hmm. because to me, when you use the word cheating, my first thing that comes to my mind is that even though I believe in medicine and I understand that there's an important role in taking drugs, just like there's an important role perhaps in using pesticides or whatever to help, you know, in our world, but to me that can be cheating sometimes. When I did have this pain thing happening, I had like this shooting pain down my arm, just to make a little drama here, but and it actually was coming from a misaligned disc thing, which lots of people, everything. So I'm sitting here meditating, and I'm thinking, oh, this is like, you know, like, what is your problem? Go home, take a nap, and take some Tylenol. Hello, get a grip here. You know, and so to me, that would have been cheating. And I thought, you know, like, well, I could go home. You know, and then I realized that that's how I had always dealt with it. You know, not that I was big on pain pills or anything like that, but it's the same thing with anything. When the artificial, the cheating subsides, then all of a sudden you're still sitting there with the thing, whatever it is. So I decided, not that I'm big on pain, which I'm not, I decided I was not going to take anything, you know, and I just sat there and I thought, okay, you could do this, you could do this. And you know, I am a wimp, and I actually did it. Is that what you're talking about? That you can actually do things you don't think you can do? If you just like open yourself that kind of allowance thing, that if you kind of try to, you know, be more organic and more accepting of what's happening. You know, I mean, I've even taken sleeping pills because I don't like to sleep, but now I just lay there, okay, you're awake, so? You know, I mean, it like can permeate everything, and I can imagine in your field with your work, you know, that you have a lot of people come to you and they just pile everything on. And sure, you know, they pile, and you're trying to sift through and say what's the most important thing here. And I'm almost thinking that everything is what you're saying. Everything's important, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, you know, whether, you know, whatever it is. Does it seem that that's what meditation brings to us? Is that opportunity to sit there and kind of sift through everything, like you're talking, and to say, okay, this is hurting, this is not hurting, this used to hurt, it doesn't hurt now, you know, and all the people in our lives, even though we might not be practicing psychotherapists, if you live, I have a husband, hello, you live with somebody, like you are, you know, you have to learn how to get along with your problems and theirs and decide whose is whose. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing, you know, being a retired person, I've never been spent this much time with anybody other than my infants when I was a mother. So it's a very different experience to interact with people, you know, and deal with all these new pains and feelings. But is that what you're sharing with us? Is this organic experience of sitting still long enough to cope with these things in some orderly fashion rather than sitting there and just trying to push them out of the way?
You said a lot.
because that's what happens sometimes. You just sit there and we say, okay, now we're going to just escape.
Yeah, I'm definitely offering another way of working with it. Yes.
Yeah.
This is offering another possibility that you don't have to escape. Yeah. That we actually have the capacity, and not only do we just have the capacity, that if we allow this capacity to come forward, then we can learn a kind of there's a lot of different ways, a kind of depth, a kind of ability to just to a kind of sensitivity to be there with all of our experience. You know, we have some idea that I can't have that one, I should have this one, and this one should be better, and that one definitely is not okay. And as I was saying earlier, we're just tearing ourselves apart, and we're just sort of getting, we're missing what our body, mind, heart, soul is telling us. And we're not trusting that there's actually tremendous information and wisdom there. And as a matter of fact, that's the only place you'll find it. But we have all these ideas. So to go back to some of what you said, you could say, I often think of this, and particularly even with emotions, that this is a form of stripping away all the artificial stuff that we've learned and actually letting something quite natural, quite deep and quite profound to come forward. And so another way of knowing and being that is not so alien. I just have to throw this in because then people get like it's really different and out there and I want it and maybe I'll get it. And it's not like that. It's like it's already there and you already have flashes and experiences of it all the time. But you're not recognizing that and you're not nurturing that. And so maybe to get back to we it's like we don't trust ourselves, we don't trust our experience, but that's all we have. So maybe we should start trusting it. Maybe we should start trusting that we actually have this ability, this equanimity or this space. There's a lot of different words that we can actually be big enough and open enough to allow all that to come. What, you know, one of the metaphors I use, well, let me put it this way, that emotions and all of experience is really a lot like weather. You know, you want to talk about a natural phenomena. So, you know, there's nice sunny skies, and then there's light rains, and then there's huge thunderstorms and so forth. What happens is we get all lost in the thunderstorms and the different things, when actually we're the sky. Okay? We're the sky. And the emotions are just natural weather coming through because of various causes and conditions, like the weather out there. And so when we think the thunderstorm's wrong or it shouldn't be raining today, instead of, oh, you know, this is the weather system that's coming through in a very natural way. And then, so this is a shift again from being, this is sort of what you're talking, being lost in the thunderstorm, and actually instead, as I said, being the sky. The thunderstorm is no problem for the sky. The sky has no problem. It doesn't feel upset by the thunderstorm. It doesn't change the sky. It doesn't make the sky better or worse. You know? And this is one of the... We are actually... When I say we are actually, it's a hard to... Those words aren't quite right, but... You know, again, it's hard to find the right words. But our deepest nature is actually... more sky-like. Emotions, sensations, feelings are part of the impermanence of phenomena. Basic teaching. Everything is changing and impermanent. If you get lost in, identify, grasp after, think you are all those things that are changing, you're sunk. And so most of us are sunk a lot of time. You know, because this body is changing. This body's going to die. My feelings are always changing. My thoughts are always changing. You know, and that's okay, that's the way it is, but you get to sort of allow that flow, and it's okay. It's not, we realize that we're more like the field in which that is happening than the things that are happening. And emotions are just one of those things. Does that sort of speak to some of what you're saying?
Yeah, I've heard the expression before that like that when you meditate it's like the clouds, like your thoughts are like the clouds. Mm-hmm. But that's even more clear to me when you call it the sky, because that is totally open. That means that not only clouds but other things can pass through, and even that's where our grief and our loss comes from. It's from the things that pass through that we remember. And there they go, and we can't hold on to them anymore. That's what you mean by the grasping, isn't mm-hmm. it? That
yes.
We can't hold on to them, and so we want to control that, but we can't. So that ability to accept is so valuable, because once, I guess, you accept. But this really helps me understand the rightness and wrongness concept of, I know I've heard it a lot, that there is no right or wrong way to meditate, but even though I've practiced meditation and yoga for decades now, I still am learning these new concepts of what it is and what it isn't. And obviously what it is the sky, which means that anything can be happening in the middle of your meditation. And that's still, it's the depth of the sky, I guess, or the openness of the sky, that is what is yes. the reality there.
Yeah.
So that really helps me.
There's from the Tao Te Ching, there's, I think it's number 13 that I've always loved, because it talks at first about the ancient masters and how you can't describe them, all you can describe is your behavior. They were really appropriate in their behavior. And then the last four lines is, can you be patient until your mud settles and the water is clear?
Yes, I read that, yes.
Can you remain unmoving until an appropriate response or an answer arises?
Yeah.
That's the only one that I've been working on. Being very impatient by nature.
Yeah. And what usually arises again is our old habits, blah, blah, blah. About when we can sort of open. So I think what I'll share with you just a little bit, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with this. Could you hand these out and hand that to you? Something you can take home with you. We'll see. Helpful.
I thought it was interesting how you had emotional pain poems, but physical pain stories. We don't find a lot of poems about physical pain.
Yeah, somehow it maybe doesn't inspire the poet. I need to come up with that. Okay, just quickly, this sigh comes from Full Catastrophe Living, John Kabat-Zinn. It's your classic MBSR thing. It's, you know, it could take you a while to kind of blur your eyes a little bit to go through it, but I'm just going to explain it briefly. I just thought I'd do it. You see here, it says coping with stress. Actually, you know John Kabat-Zinn. We've practiced together, and stress is his way of talking about suffering. So modern way is word is stress. But he's talking about suffering, and he's talking about reactivity patterns. So when he says stress reaction, he means the reactivity patterns that I've been talking about. So again, on the left side here, we see there's something that triggers our internal reactivity patterns. And then we see down the side here all the things that begin to happen when we're caught again and again in our reactivity patterns. And you may recognize yourself in some of these physical and emotional different things happening. Turning to, substances and all kinds of things. This is suffering. This is a diagram of suffering. First noble truth when we get caught in our stuff. Right? And then over on the other side is the idea that if we become, again, this is the more Western scientific way of talking about the Four Noble Truths, but if you begin to learn this mindfulness, this openness, this ability to allow and accept and become more sky-like, which, as I said, is actually more our deepest nature, we begin to be able to just let. It doesn't mean we don't feel. We feel actually more in a sense. We're less blocked, so we actually, but we're not attaching. We're it's just like we're there for the dance of it. And we're not caught in reactivity. We have more relaxation, more all of that. Then this whole other possibility is there. Okay. There's even more possibility than this. This isn't go on to the levels of Nibbana, and there's beyond that. But just for your fun. Okay, the other side is really what I want to just mention.
Can I ask them real quick?
Oh, sure.
What is the BP, the initials here, BP?
High blood pressure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And BP, would be blood pressures going up. Yeah. Okay. So emotional, physiological, you can see it's, all tied in, mixed up together. Okay. So the other side of this, mindfulness of emotions, again, it's just some recommendations. Some of you may have heard the RAIN acronym, which is on here, which is when an emotion arises. This can be a meditation or not, but often it's taught towards. You recognize it. You may have a name for it, but you don't even necessarily have to have a label for it. Anger arises, And then there's this profound just acknowledgement, like in that story about the mangy dog of pain. He just acknowledged that he had pain and he didn't like it. It was the simple recognition and acceptance. Not it had to be fixed, it had to be changed, it shouldn't be. We go on and on and on with that. But this simple recognizing and accepting, it's here. It's like this. Investigation, again, is kind of the another step, which means is to get even more sensitive and open and explore it, see more deeply into it. And then the last one is non-identification or not identifying, meaning that same thing again, not getting lost in it, making the stories about it, and it's about me, and I'm overwhelmed, and I'm indulging, and I'm this, but it's a kind of seeing it for, if you feel it, that you know it's a weather system going through. It's not me or not, it's not even not me. It's not me or not me. It's, you know, it's sort of, that's moot. It's just this experience that's unfolding. So that will really help you. Another thing that's actually not on this list, most important, it's on this list, should be honest. When you're practicing being aware of emotions, it's really useful to go into the physical feeling of it. You'll have the story, because often the storyline and content, although not always, but often there's a storyline, you know, this happened. But it's to feel it, it's in the body and the energy. Notice it. Just go with that there. Get out of your head. So notice its presence. Step back is that same thing we were talking about, getting a distance on it. Get unstuck means, again, sort of that when we're kind of glued into it, it's sort of like, ah, taking a breath. Experience your emotion, the wave-like changing. And then here's all the not repressing, not feeding stuff. You don't need to block it, suppress it. You begin to notice you don't have to get rid of it. You don't have to push it away. You don't have to hold on to it. You don't have to increase it. We're so active trying to manipulate things when actually if we just let them be, we would find some peace and wisdom. And then you are not your emotion. Again, remembering you don't have to act on it. You know, people get angry, that means I have to smash something. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't mean that. You have a choice. Sometimes remembering you felt differently can help break you out of, you know, people get into, I'm going to have this emotion and I'm going to have it forever and it's awful and this is impermanent too. And then the next one of not judging it, a kind of willingness and a radical acceptance and warmth. Okay? I do want to get some actual meditation in. But we're going to, you've been sitting for a while, so I want to do some moving meditation, walking meditation. But any other questions about this? And then, again, we'll meditate. I'll give a little introduction in the beginning when we come back again from moving. And you can explore it more in sitting practice. Okay? All right. Thank you. And so let's do about 15 minutes of, again, silence and walking practice, outside, inside. Attending to your physical experience, but you may begin to notice the range of emotional sensations that are there too. And can you allow the flow of physical feeling, the flow of emotional feeling? And we'll ring the bell about 15 minutes.